Life delivers enough disappointments of its own. It's hard to accommodate unforeseen changes in our plans, for instance. Events we can't control. But few things cut any deeper than when a good friend or family member betrays our trust. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll presents another message in the classic series called What If? During the next half hour, we'll look at an epic encounter in 2 Kings. And through this dramatic story, we'll search for practical application. How do you cope when someone you love sabotages your relationship? Chuck titled today's sermon, What If a Longtime Friend Deceives You?
I'm involved in a rather unusual series that I've titled simply, What If? As many of you will remember, we began with, what if God chooses you to do something great? And we looked at Moses, who stood at the burning bush, 80-year-old shepherd, thinking he was way over the hill, and God said, no, I've got something great in mind for you. You're going to lead the Exodus. And you remember the verbal battle that he and God went through. Second time was, what if you suddenly lose everything? And we looked, of course, at Job, who did, in fact, lose it all. But he said, the Lord gave, the Lord took away, blessed be the name of the Lord. He was not in any way shaken in his faith. Last time, you heard a message that you've never heard before from a pulpit. I called it, what if you are being stalked? And I wondered when I prepared this whole series if that one would cause people to wonder, what on earth is he doing dealing with that? But I don't know when I've received more responses to a message in the last several years than that one. Just this morning, yet another one of a woman who is being stalked, how the Bible addresses that subject. Today we're looking at, what if a longtime friend deceives you? Many of us have had that happen. I've had it happen several times in my life, and I know I speak for a number of you. Those who were once friends, for whatever reason, deceived us and betrayed our trust. And it broke our heart, didn't it? In this case, the longtime friend is a man named Gehazi. Most of you have not even heard of him. He was a friend of a prophet named Elisha. The story is in 2 Kings chapter 5, where we read of the healing of a man named Naaman, N-A-A-M-A-N, who is a commander of an army, and yet he has leprosy. And he finds God's miraculous healing, and everything changes. Well, we pick up the story at verse 15 of 2 Kings 5, and please stand for the reading of the scriptures. 2 Kings 5, beginning at verse 15. Then Naaman and his entire party went back to find the man of God. I'm reading from the New Living Translation. They stood before him, and Naaman said, now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel, so please accept a gift from your servant. But Elisha replied, as surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept any gifts. And though Naaman urged him to take the gift, Elisha refused. Verse 20. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said to himself, my master should not have let this Aramean get away without accepting any of his gifts. As surely as the Lord lives, I will chase after him and get something from him. So Gehazi set off after Naaman. When Naaman saw Gehazi running after him, he climbed down from his chariot and went to meet him. Is everything all right? Naaman asked. Yes, Gehazi said, but my master has sent me to tell you that Two young prophets from the hill country of Ephraim have just arrived. He would like 75 pounds of silver and two sets of clothing to give to them. By all means, take twice as much silver, Naaman insisted. He gave him two sets of clothing, tied up the money in two bags, and sent two of his servants to carry the gifts for Gehazi. But when they arrived at the citadel, Gehazi took the gifts from the servants and sent the men back. Then he went and hid the gift inside the house. When he went into his master, Elisha asked him, "Where have you been, Gehazi?" "I haven't been anywhere," he replied. But Elisha asked him, "Don't you realize that I was there in spirit when Naaman stepped down from his chariot to meet you? Is this the time to receive money and clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and cattle, male and female servants? Because you have done this, you and your descendants will suffer from Naaman's leprosy forever." When Gehazi left the room, he was covered with leprosy. His skin was white as snow.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his newly formatted Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck called, "What If a Longtime Friend Deceives You?"
Cartoonist Gary Larson was among the best. I always loved his Far Side cartoons. He was famous for putting human words in animals' mouths and then portraying them in a strange, weird kind of way that made those of us with a weird sense of humor laugh out loud. It was really great. For example, there's one of my favorites. There are two deer standing in the clearing in a thick forest, and one of the deer has a big bullseye on his side, big, big target. And his buddy says to him, "Hey, Ralph, bummer of a birthmark." Well, I was in the local Hallmark store the other day thumbing through a Far Side calendar until they almost asked me to leave because I was laughing out loud at one after another. One was a classic cartoon. Here's a gang of shackled slaves standing on a long pier. Near them are some Roman soldiers frowning, staring at them. And then along the water comes this beautiful long galley ship pulling up to the harbor, about to be tied up to the pier, and the long oars have been pulled back in, and it's kind of coming in the scene. One of the clueless slaves says to his buddy, "Hey, Grog," which I thought was funny, just the name Grog. "Hey, Grog, that's a great looking boat. I wonder what makes it go." Maybe it's because I'm a preacher, but when I read that line, my mind flashed from a long, sleek galley ship to a large, healthy church. I could imagine one clueless Christian saying to his buddy, "Hey, George, this is one great church. I wonder what makes it go." Well, the answer is the same as I would say to the slave on the pier. You do. We do. The words of Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 tie in with all of this. And if your Bible is open, you will see that slaves actually or a major part of the work of a church, along with stewards, slaves and stewards, not celebrities, not powerful people, not those with the most money, but slaves. In fact, they're called servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries. Listen to the verse as it appears in the New American Standard Version. Let a man regard us, meaning Paul and Apollos, let a man regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. By using those two descriptive terms, servants and stewards, Paul defines the task of those who make the church go. Not great, well-known leaders, not famous pastors, not those up front, but servants and stewards. That's what he calls them. Think of us, Apollos and me, as mere servants of Christ. Now, before I go any further, those two words need to be analyzed for you to appreciate why I began this message as I did. It wasn't just about cartoons. Look at the word servants. Some might even render it slaves. Are you ready? That word servant comes from a very interesting Greek term, huperetos. Huperetos. Hupa means under. Eretes means, are you ready? Rower. Rower. Somebody who holds an oar and rows. One of my references said it has reference to those who row in the lower tier of a trireme, those relegated to the bottom tier of galley ships, best rendered under rowers. It's the only time in all the writings of Paul, or for that matter, the New Testament, that this term, huperetos, appears. Under rowers. Not very flattering, is it? Now, let's don't stop there. There's also the word steward. See it there? Look at it. Verse 2, a person who is a steward must be faithful. See the word steward, or as it's rendered in the New Living Translation, a manager. You know what the word means? And again, it's not very flattering. It means housekeeper. Housekeeper. It's used for a butler, a maid, a cook, someone who works in the kitchen, those who spend time preparing meals for a family. But in this case, get this, we who are stewards in the church prepare by explaining God's mysteries to one another. Mysterion is the word that means mystery. In fact, we get our word mystery from it. And it carries with it the idea of secrets. Secrets. Do you realize that whenever I prepare a message, I am digging into the book of secrets? Not secrets just to me, but for the average individual on earth who wouldn't know such secrets. And I'm digging away, preparing to serve a well-prepared meal that will help equip individuals with the truth of God. We are under rowers and we are housekeepers. Listen to me. How easy it is to forget our primary role. In fact, the one main responsibility of both, you'll see at the end of verse 2, is to be faithful. Not flashy, not clever and cute, not funny and entertaining, but faithful. 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 What you really want in the galley ship among the under rowers is those who row and row and row their boat. And what you want in the galleys, that is the kitchens of the boat as well as the home, are faithful people who do the work of preparing well. My point is this. It is a great temptation for under rowers to begin to see themselves over the years as more than that, and sort of envy those that are on the upper deck where the skipper guides the ship, the captain. In the case of the church, that's Christ. But he alone deserves the role of head of the church. The great temptation is for a person of less significance to long for rewards or to have a higher rank or to be seen as more important. We are under rowers and we are managers. And we're not fixing food. You will notice we are involved in explaining God's mysteries, telling other people of God's secrets, if you will. Understand this, we don't steer the ship. That's the job of the captain. His name is Jesus. He alone is the head of the church. We're under rowers. We row as he guides. And the second, we manage, we serve well-prepared truths that enable the good ship ministry to go. I find that fascinating when I think about all the things that are written these days about the church, and very little even mentions the role of servanthood, which is the secret of a healthy church. You and I have a main responsibility, and it is described in verse 2, we must be faithful. The longer I live, the more I admire and appreciate faithfulness. To me, it's more impressive than fruitfulness. It's certainly more impressive than making a splash or being clever or cute. Faithfulness. In season and out of season, we are never to forget our primary role as we stay down on the bottom tier and we keep rowing. As we stay in the kitchen, we keep serving. We do it never once thinking that we deserve to be up there steering the ship. That's the role of the captain. That's not our role. Can I put this message on hold and give you a very personal story illustration, which is true of me? Allow me to tell you this. Back when I graduated from Dallas Seminary, I had an inestimable opportunity and privilege to serve alongside a minister who was respected around the world, Dr. J. Dwight Pentecost. He and I could not have been more different. We were the same in beliefs and convictions, but we were so different. He was older, I was young. He was everything I was not. He was scholarly and wise. He was seasoned. He was an outstanding expositor of the scriptures, almost without a note. He was a published author. Of best-selling books. He was a splendid and respected professor of the school that I had attended. He had once been my professor Now I was his assistant. Wherever he went, whether at here or abroad or in another church across the states, crowds gathered. He had a spotless reputation. I'm honest when I tell you, I never once saw him draw attention to himself. Never once. To this day. A genuine servant of Christ. Mine was an enviable position to fill as his assistant. Throughout those years, I would preach in our church in his absence. What a privilege it was. When I preached, crowds gathered, thinking that he was going to be the one that was preaching. It was not my reputation that drew the crowd. They all came and their mouths sort of dropped open when they realized that this rookie was standing up there in his place and I rode on his shirt tails. Mine was a borrowed popularity. It was his preaching that made the church significant. The crowded sanctuary was the result of his greatness, not mine. I had none. God rewarded him for his years of integrity and commitment. I was an under rower. I was a housekeeper. Early one afternoon, an elder came to see me. True story. His name is Jim. Jim, wise and gracious, had some strong words for me to hear, which to this day I can almost repeat by heart. He said, I want you to avoid the temptation of dropping his name. I want you to guard yourself against any spirit of entitlement. I don't see you doing that, he said candidly, and I don't ever want to see you doing that. I want you to know how much I love you. And I've struggled with this conversation, but the Lord has, I think, led me here to say this, and I hope you will never forget it, and I never will.
You're listening to Insight for Living, and there's much more we need to hear from Chuck Swindoll's message called What If a Longtime Friend Deceives You? You can purchase CDs from Insight for Living or find downloadable audio files by going to insightworld.org/store. Maybe you've been in this same position. As Chuck allows this story to unfold, perhaps you've been thinking about that friend or business partner or perhaps a mate who has willfully deceived you. Well, in a moment, we'll describe how you can request two helpful CDs from Chuck Swindoll called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness.
Dave, all of us have one thing in common. No one escapes. Every single one listening to my voice right now has been offended by someone. So in these few moments remaining, I want you to identify that person who has hurt you deeply. Perhaps it's a broken friendship. Maybe it's something ugly that was said to you or about you. It could be a spouse who violated your trust or a business partner who sabotaged your success. Quietly, privately, right now, say their name. Rather than waiting for that person to come back to you, crawling on his or her knees, pleading for forgiveness, maybe God is prompting you to be the one to take the first steps. Jesus said that his followers are to forgive, just as he forgave us. And when we fail to do so, oh, we suffer painful consequences. In fact, Matthew 18 assures us from the words of Jesus that those who don't forgive are turned over to the torturers. In a Swindoll paraphrase, failing to forgive is like drinking a bottle of poison, hoping the other person will die. Now, if you're ready to transform the relationship with the person you identified a few moments ago, I'm urging you to request two messages today. These two CDs contain biblical instruction that will set you free from the bondage of resentment. In addition to my teaching from the book of Matthew, you'll also hear my wife, Cynthia, share her emotion-filled story of pain and resentment, followed by a sweet season of forgiveness and then full freedom. Ask for the CDs called Finding Healing Through Forgiveness.
The CD that includes Cynthia's testimony is one of the most popular messages ever presented on this program, and is contained in the two CD package we're calling Finding Healing Through Forgiveness. Both are yours when you give a donation of any amount today. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Or it might be quicker and more efficient to simply give online at insight.org. We know that people all across the country and around the world are craving to experience genuine forgiveness. And the most effective way to deliver this redemptive message is through this daily program. It's our monthly companions who make this possible. Their monthly gifts not only stabilize the ministry financially, but more importantly, their generosity is what God uses to reach people with hope through biblical forgiveness. Become a monthly companion right now. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org/monthly companion. Finally, let me invite you to request a complimentary copy of a classic booklet from Chuck. It's called Taking on Life with a Great Attitude. This is one of those resources you'll enjoy reading at your leisure, and then you'll want to pass it along to a son or daughter, or perhaps a friend. This offer is valid only in the United States, and you can request a free copy by going to insight.org/attitude. Join us again Friday at this same time when Chuck Swindoll's classic series called What If continues here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, What If a Longtime Friend Deceives You, was copyrighted in 2013, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2015 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.